We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Hey there, my name is Ricky Smith, and I'm the founder of Random Acts of Kindness Everywhere, a nonprofit that simply does exactly what it says: promote kindness everywhere. We know the world is crazy right now. If you are searching for a podcast that has a deeper conversation about race, my co-host Angel Gray and I will be discussing everything going on right now on our podcast, Random Acts of Podcast, on Blue Wire Podcast Network. To find out more, go to rakenow.org. Enjoy the show.
Blue Wire.
Breaking news, Terry Rozier, he'll be the next starting point guard of the Charlotte Hornets.
Step back, wide open, and it's good! Terry Rozier!
Lamb has the fire!
All right, hello and welcome into another Buzz Beat. This is Richie, and I'll be joined by Spencer and Brian today. On today's episode, we are going to get into tying a bow on the season for the Charlotte Hornets. If you didn't get a chance to listen to our last episode, which happened to be 2 weeks ago, we talked about the possible formats as the NBA planned on resuming its season. And now we have more news that the league is planning on going to Orlando with 22 teams, but the Hornets happen to be the 23rd team, and they won't be one of the teams participating down there. So we'll do our best to talk about that decision, some of the ramifications that that has on the Hornets team, and try to tie a bow on this season and give our overall thoughts as it seems the Hornets won't be playing any kind of meaningful basketball games until December. So, guys, how's everything going with you? I know we took a week off last week. It just didn't feel right recording an episode with everything that's kind of going on. But how are you guys hanging in there?
Hanging in there. Continuing to hang in there. But, yeah, no, it was kind of nice today to get some Hornets news out there, you know, having some morning coffee, listening to Brian on WFNZ and Richie, you know, getting on the press conference. So although there's not going to be meaningful basketball for a while for Charlotte, at least until we hear something more, which I guess we could with like a mini camp or something, it was nice to just kind of get back into Hornets mode. And I don't know, just kind of like felt like restarting the engines in a sense, I guess, a little bit.
I know what Spencer means. It did feel good for the, it was sort of a newsy day of sorts for the Hornets. We can expand on that more in a second. It was good just to have this team is sort of in the headlines and be able to tie a bow on the season. And I mean, maybe we'll see there may be some potential offseason activities on the horizon for them and perhaps some of these training camp like suggestions too. But as far as the actual 2019-2020 season goes in terms of competition, like it's good to have a little bit of closure, albeit premature on that. And some other little bits of good news specific to the Hornets. And you know, I don't mean this as like a an exercise in escapism or whatever too. Like it's generally good to have the Hornets and be back on with you guys and talk about this team. As much as I love talking about the draft, like it's we've done a lot of that. You know, this has been good, and as I'm sure for a lot of people, like the last 3 months have been crazy, you know, whether you haven't seen your family or if you lost a job. And then, you know, what happened with the death of George Floyd, really sort of like accelerating, the collective anxiety and frustration of the country the last week and a half here. Yeah. Like I was in no mood to talk hoops last week, and I'm happy to see that even as people are sort of starting to come back and talk basketball and stuff like that, that the collective consciousness of America hasn't like put this, this didn't just, this, what we're talking about with George Floyd, police in America, it existed beyond a like 72 hour news cycle. And I'm happy to see that. It makes me feel like we could actually see some change, some kind in America for the positive. And that's, it feels like a step in the right direction. I've been at the protests in Raleigh or a bunch of them, and just like getting away from Twitter and actually like being back out in the community has been like good for my soul. So anyways, if people are considering doing that in their own towns, like I strongly recommend doing that and going out and showing your support. But yes, good to be back and talking Hornets with you guys for sure.
It does feel like this, this is going to stick. Like this time we've seen a lot of police, you know, violence against African-Americans. But, you know, Brian, kind of to your point, it feels like this one, it has some staying power and is going to make some actual change. And there's certainly nothing positive, you know, I mean, I shouldn't use the word positive associated with anything that we've seen, you know, in our country the last few weeks, week and a half. But I think that this pandemic and maybe just the lack of other things that our society can move on to is really going to end up being impactful. And I think that, again, I don't know what other word to use other than positive right now, but that's the one positive I kind of look at and say, I think this one's going to matter. And so it matters for us, it matters for the country, it matters for our kids one day, you know, it feels like we're really actually taking a step here. So.
And Brian, you sort of mentioned this. We have some biggish news concerning Malik Monk. It was at the end of the, or actually kind of towards the middle of this press conference with Mitch Kupchak that he mentioned that Malik Monk was reinstated. He said it in a very like nonchalant manner. And with the Hornets not necessarily participating this summer in basketball, obviously not in Orlando, it may not mean much for this season, but we'll kind of see how it pans out moving forward. I really don't have any big thoughts on this news other than the fact that it's good to see Malik Monk that is back in compliance with this anti-drug program with the NBA. I mean, Spencer, what are your overall thoughts on this news that kind of came out of nowhere?
Yeah, I mean, it's huge for Charlotte. I mean, be able to get him back in the gym and you know, I mean, there's a lot of guys I thought on this team that developed this year. We can talk about that more later, but Monk really, I would say in the last like, you know, 3 to 4 weeks before the season was upended and when his season was because of the suspension, he was playing some of his best basketball ever in his NBA career. So, you know, it surprised me. I thought that, you know, part of his suspension, although it was spelled to us as it's indefinite, so nobody knew what that meant in terms of games. But I thought it might be frozen, you know, when the season stopped. So, you know, I just assumed the NBA would make him, you know, pay for the suspension via games. But whatever he had to do to get right with the league and get right with the team and get himself healthy, you know, commend him. And it's huge for Charlotte to have him back in the gym now. And, you know, if we do get some kind of mini camp or training camp or these 8 teams that got left out of Orlando get together, I think it's just awesome that Charlotte will be able to have Monk involved in that.
I think sometimes it's easy, maybe not with myself or not with you guys on the pod, but I just think like at large collectively in the NBA basketball universe, it's easy to forget about Malik as a piece of Charlotte's young core. Because he's never sort of like really turned the leaf until this season, even then sort of just like a microwave scorer off the bench. And he struggled with a shot this year as well too. But, and I know the advanced numbers weren't pretty for him on either end of the court this season in terms of the impact data. But just like if you watch this guy play, you knew he's a different player. Like the tape doesn't lie. And there's some information that backs that up too. You know, we can see just how frequently he was getting to the rim, how many of those finishes were coming unassisted. And Spencer said, man, his time is invaluable. It's great to have him in the gym with guys like Devontae and PJ and Miles and Cody and McDaniels, like all of those guys, like this time is important. I know the franchise, if you listen to James Borrego on the Woj pod today, you know, they're upset about missing out on the rest of the season and what is some truly important part of for development, which is at the core of everything Charlotte's doing under James Borrego right now. Having Malik in-house now for whatever the next 9 months look like for Charlotte as he's heading into the final season of his rookie contract is noteworthy and important. And I'm glad for him, because I think Malik, the light went on with him in some areas on the court this season. I'm happy to see he was able to take care of himself and get back in the gym relatively quickly. This seems like one of the few victories that Charlotte's going to get this season around the like amended pandemic schedule. You know what I mean? Like left out of Orlando, missing some local TV deal games, but they do get Malik Monk back now, which that's not nothing.
Right. And you almost wonder when he was reinstated, because they weren't coming out with this news. It just happened to come up because the question was asked. I can't imagine it being today. We're recording this on a Monday that they actually reinstated him. So who knows when he actually was reinstated with the team, and when he's been, you know, maybe going on those like workouts where you have one-on-one time in the gym. But anyway, let's go on.
Just the real quick, yeah. Like you guys see the news about LaMarcus Aldridge today? And the Spurs have shut him down for the rest of the season because he had surgery, I think, on his shoulder. But it's like the surgery took place literally in April, 6 weeks ago. And that news, I mean, I'm sure guys have just been sitting on that or newsbreakers have been sitting on that. Or really maybe it was just kept up sealed for a month and a half now. But, yeah, that news came out today, and it was nuts to see when the surgery actually took place. Because it was, again, it was in the month of April. And here we are now, the second week of June.
All right, let's take a break real quick. There's no shortage of action going on at our exclusive partners, betonline.ag. Sports are slowly making their way back, and BetOnline is leading the way with the best odds and lines for all UFC, NASCAR, boxing, and soccer matches. And if you need even more, they have simulated NFL, NBA, and UFC simulations all day, every day, live on their website. Looking for something else other than sports? BetOnline has hundreds of casino games, poker tournaments, and prop bets to check out. Visit betonline.ag and use promo code BLUEWIRE for a free welcome bonus. That's one word, BLUEWIRE. BetOnline, your online wagering experts. All right, let's get on to our thoughts on this like approved plan for the resumption of the NBA season. And let's just try to take a look at it from the NBA's point of view and taking our Hornets bias out of this. So there's going to be 22 teams that are heading down to Orlando, and they're targeting a late July start for the actual games. Washington is the only technically non-playoff team in the East, where you're going to have New Orleans, Phoenix, Portland, Sacramento, and San Antonio to make the 22 teams, with Charlotte not being one of them. And I thought this was pretty cool. They had a play-in game for the 8th seed. If the 9th seed by the end of these 8 games is within 4 games of the 8th seed, they will have basically a play-in game. It still does favor the 8th seed in the sense that if they do lose it the first game, they have another opportunity to win. But if the 9th seed loses their first game, they're done. So I'm going to give my thoughts on this, and the NBA Board of Governors did approve this plan. I think for the safety of the league and its players, this really was the right decision, trying to limit the number of teams and players down there. And this was something that we discussed on the last episode, where we didn't really think it was feasible to get all 30 teams down there. It sucks that the number 23 team happens to be Charlotte. I think Borrego mentioned it a lot about them wanting to compete and keeping up with the team and playing together. And they're going to be going a lot of days without meaningful basketball. But in terms of logistical and competitive standpoint, it just didn't make sense for Charlotte to go down there. And if they did go down there, I'm not sure that they would have been within 4 games by the end of the 8 games. So they really could have just gone down there and they'd be heading right back to Charlotte with nothing really gained other than maybe a handful of games played together. And we'll kind of go deeper into this later in the podcast, how this affects the Hornets organization. But I really do like how they're managing the 8-9 play-in game, like I mentioned before. But Brian, just from like a league's perspective, how do you think the league did with this plan? I mean, are there some things that you dislike, or for the most part, do you like how they're going to carry out the rest of the season?
Yeah, I think they did okay. I don't think this is like their best work on this, but I get why they went with 22 teams. I think when we recorded a couple weeks ago, I was advocating for 16 teams and getting to the playoffs as quickly as you can. But it's obvious that they wanted some regular season games, or I can't remember what the term is that they're using to refer to these regular season games now. There's a different terminology for them, but it's clear that beyond just finding some sort of newfound competition in potentially the playing game, which seems like it's a likely scenario in the Western Conference, that they just wanted like inventory, you know, to have these guys be able to warm up and play some basketball before the playoffs started, but also so they could have a television product. And it does seem like, I believe, you know, the league won't take, or the players won't take nearly as much of a haircut in terms of lost money now because of these games. I think they're going to get back $300 million or so in salaries just because they're going to, you know, these 88, you know, of these new games or whatever. I think they could have accomplished this with 20 teams. Like, I think it's sort of ridiculous that Washington and Phoenix are headed down. And I think ultimately you still could have gotten a similar number of games. So you still with 20 teams, so you would have still had enough inventory for the players to make back some cash. I think they could have been really creative with this format, even though I wasn't advocating for that. I don't think we're getting anything that creative, like them seeding 1 through 16, or, you know, in eschewing the conferences. We're not getting some sort of World Cup style pool play scenario. But I do think it's like a little interesting. We've got unbalanced teams from each conference going down there. And it means we get a little more Zion Williamson too, which I'm sure the league is not upset about, and neither am I. So not a perfect solution, and I'm sure a variety of teams inside the 22 teams on the outside, like Charlotte, are disappointed or upset. I'm guessing Memphis probably isn't stoked with how things have shaken out for them. And even though they'll have, assuming they hold on to the 8th seed and someone's within 4 games, they'll have 2 games to win 1. So their odds are still pretty good, but I could see why they would be frustrated. Anyways, the league was not going to come to a perfect solution. Everyone was going to have to be willing to make some compromises here. And, cause even teams like the Lakers and the Bucks, like, they've lost home court too. Like, everyone's right, making some sacrifices for the greater good here. So ultimately I think they checked all the boxes that they needed to. And I just need to see more information now on, or I think everyone does, when the league is ready to kick it out, on testing protocols for players that, or groups of players that test positive, you know, what that's going to look like. I think that information is vital. But I think for the most part, the league did a pretty good job having to thread a needle in what is clearly a bad hand that they've been dealt here.
Yeah, I think they just did okay on this as well. I don't, you know, I have no clue why Phoenix and Washington are there. I know Brian said that.
Yeah, it's dumb.
It's stupid. It doesn't make any sense. That, to me, the more I've thought about it, that I guess the significance of the number 22 is somehow tied to league revenue would be my hunch. Now, who knows whether or not that's true, but it's just such a, like, when you look at where Phoenix is, and literally they have almost a 0% chance of making the postseason.
Yeah.
And Washington has a very little chance, you know, as far back as they are. So feels to me like it has to be tied to revenue. I mean, I would have rather seen, like, if they were going to abandon the conference, Western Conference hierarchy, and just say, okay, we're taking the best 22 teams, and I would have much rather seed them 1 through 16, you know, and give all these Western Conference teams that they have invited a real chance to get that 16th spot. You know, like, that would have made a lot more sense. Mm-hmm. It's just like, if you're going to be, I don't think the creativity, I mean, it's not even really creativity, honestly. Like, what they're doing with this playing game, if that's all you were going to do, then just don't even, like, try anything. because you could have just left two other teams at home.
Yeah.
You know, that limits the amount of people that are there. and really gets teams that can actually compete for the postseason, the true 20, you know, in Orlando. So I got to imagine it's tied to revenue. So I don't know. It's definitely disappointing for Charlotte. I mean, just the fact that they're the 23rd team has some you know, some comedy tied in there. But go ahead, BJ, you can.
That coming from just from Charlotte's perspective, like them being the 23rd team, so the sort of, in theory, the first left out. And I assume we'll get some assurances about this, but the fact that it was not like immediately stated publicly in the reporting from Woj and from Mark Stein and from Shams too, but that like those eight teams that are not going, their odds have to be locked in for the lottery. Like it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Even if it's like statistically unlikely that a team like Washington or Phoenix or whatever could fall below Charlotte, like that can't happen. That just can't.
Right.
That absolutely cannot happen. There's got to be some mechanism in place to lock the Hornets in the other teams in their spots as far as their odds go.
And I think that's official, right? That's official right now. Charlotte will be getting a better, you know, shot at the lottery than Washington, right?
Yeah. The eight teams, at least how I understand it, it's their odds. So the lottery really effectively is between eight teams. And yeah. so the other, I guess the remaining six, you know, their records are frozen as of March 11th. So yes, good job on the league to do that, because like, guess what? Phoenix is probably going to go 2-8 in Orlando. Like Washington's probably going to go 2-8 or 3-7 in Orlando.
Yeah.
And if Washington would have gone 2-8 in Orlando, they would have finished the season with a worse winning percentage than the Hornets. Now that would have been, that's a bad look for the NBA if that would have happened and they hadn't done anything to kind of secure those eight teams' odds. Yeah. So that was nice to see. But yeah, I mean, look, good on the NBA for like pulling this off though at the same time and getting a plan. And you know, one of the hardest things to do, I think, with this many powerful people is to get them to sign off on the percentage you need signed off on to get something like this enacted. I mean, you talk about all these different agendas, you know, every single team, all 30, they had a different idea of what they wanted out of this. And so for Silver to get 29 yes votes, it just, I think, speaks volumes about his leadership. It's just another data point that he can rally a group of guys. And it's just, you know, I think more than anything, I don't know that this is going to go well in Orlando, and I think there's a lot of details they very clearly have to still work out. But the fact that Silver is able to drag something like this across the finish line as quickly and so far as seamless as he's done it, I think is just – it's another point, a data point of why the NBA is the strongest league, right, professional league. They're aligned on everything, and that's because of Silver's leadership.
You're seeing how baseball is, like, crumbling at the seams
yeah.
to, like, for the owners to give a proposal that the players have, you know, any willingness to sign right now. It's been amazing to see MLB owners sort of just try to like repackage these same bad offers and kick it back to players. Like they think they're going to trick these guys into taking a deal that works, especially for the owners more so than the other stakeholders in the league, the players. And yeah, there's labor peace in the NBA. Like this is nothing new. Yep. Adam Silver's fostered a lot of goodwill over the years. He's clearly accessible and close with a lot of players. The money's been flowing in so good for a couple of years now. That certainly helps too. But yeah, Silver's been, as far as public facing commissioners go in North American professional sports, like he's just totally the man for the job. In what the NBA, what any scenario that they could be asked right now, because he just has so much equity built up with the owners and players and look, the Players Association adds effective leadership to Michelle Roberts and Chris Paul. It's a team effort, and it's impressive that, with all these different variables and potentially life altering, elements to consider, that they were able to string together what is a pretty good plan. I mean, we'll see how it plays out. You know, nothing's airtight, but you're right, Spencer. It's Silver's. He's able to get these guys to move in a way that no other commissioner in North American pro sports can do. It's not, it's really not even close.
Right. I mean, the one thing that the baseball has working against them is they have a full season that they're having to deal with. Right.
Totally. Yes.
So the salary 100%. Issue becomes a whole lot bigger when you're dealing with,
It's not apples to apples right. by any means, but that is one. It's just one example to compare right. out towards.
But I mean, of course, there is plenty of incentive for everybody to get on board to an extent, because I do think, I mean, depending on what you're reading, it sounds like the league is going to recover quite a bit of revenue.
Yes,
there's the projections are all over the place, but if they're able to satisfy, you know, most of these local TV deals and also some national TV deals, which I'm sure they'll be able to in Orlando with the playoffs, and they're getting all the playoff games, right? Like we're not seeing 5-game series. We're getting 7-game series.
Best of seven, man.
Yeah.
So, and maybe, I mean, maybe even a play in this like play in tournament too. Like that could be two more games that are quasi playoff by definition playoff too. And we'll see too. Some of these proposals go in place for the other 8 teams outside of the bubble or whatever. Like there may be some televised, maybe that's a remote possibility, but they're proposing some television games for that scenario too. So maybe we see in August, we see the Hawks versus the Hornets or something like that. Yeah. You know what I mean? Yeah. I think that's way deep into the woods, but they may even find a way to get now a far less, As far as like a national audience goes, yeah, there's maybe limited appeal to that, but you still may be able to scrounge up a few more games to throw on television too,
right?
Later in the summer.
And that gets us to our next point. I want to talk about, you know, how does this affect the Charlotte Hornets team on the court? I know a lot of fans are disappointed that they aren't playing anymore, or they're not being brought to Orlando. The last game that the Hornets did play was March 11th, and if they play again on December 1st, which is like the proposed start of the new season, they will have gone 265 days without a regular season game. So just to give you guys an idea, last season, between the 2019 season to this 2020 season, there was 197 days between it. So big difference there. And I'm not sure if it's possible, but I guess it's becoming more and more possible as we're hearing these reports. But I do wonder if these non-invitees can have some kind of training camp in the summer just to get a chance to play together more. And you did mention this, Brian, that Woj did report that these 8 teams that didn't make Orlando potentially, they want some kind of televised event between them. And the conference call today with JB, he kept talking about how the Hornets were hitting their stride and they were playing their best basketball of their season towards the beginning of March, and they just can't get that momentum back. But what he does say is he does want to play again, and they're going to be at a disadvantage when you're comparing the 8 teams to the 22 teams in terms of just being able to play together. They will be going so long without playing any kind of meaningful basketball here. I will say this. I don't think it's as big a deal as maybe it's, you know, being made out to be, but I do think there's some kind of development lost here with this team. They were playing well. I'm just not sure that would have translated. Like, I'm not sure like them playing well in March would have translated to them playing well in Orlando if they started up in July. You know what I mean?
Like, it just sort of depends on what you feel about, you know, momentum or whatever. Like, is that a thing? You know, can it be measured in some way, shape, or form? I think a lot of people would argue that, you know, no and no to both of those things. But I think there's something to be said about routine and rhythm and stuff like that. By the way, how much do you guys want to bet? You know, I think they're saying what, first game of the season for 2020, 2021 on December 1st, but that's not in stone.
Yeah.
How much you want to bet that date gets pushed back?
Yeah.
Too?
Yeah.
I don't think the players are going to, I mean, they're going to push back on that one.
Yeah. It is going to, regardless of when this starts, even if it does start on December 1st, December 25th or somewhere in between, it is going to be interesting having the NBA start after college hoops, you know, next season, assuming college hoops starts on time, which as of right now it is, but that's a whole other set of circumstance that's not worth going into. But you could tell when JB spoke with Woj on his pod today too, you can tell he and the player and the teams, like the team, they're frustrated about not being able to play, you know, like they want to play more basketball, and you can really tell. And he keeps talking about it from a development standpoint, wanting guys to get into a gym and and play basketball. Do you guys want to talk at all about the proposal that Woj reported on late over the weekend, or no?
I just kind of wanted to piggyback on what you were just mentioning, Brian. Then we can specifically talk about the proposal. But, you know, I think, like, and I brought this up the first time we had this conversation about Orlando and, you know, if Charlotte would be invited or not. I mean, I think context really matters. And I think that Charlotte is just not some, you know, shitty team that doesn't deserve anything good in the NBA. I think that they pivoted, and we can go back and argue whether or not they should have traded Kemba Walker. I think everyone knows how we feel at this point. So they could have been a little bit more responsible in that process. But here they are with a young core, with a clean cap sheet, with all their assets.
Yep.
And not only a young core, but a rapidly so far developing young core. Context really matters. And, of course, that's where their frustration comes from, right? Like, they had some way downs this season, but they had some really high ups, and those high ups were just starting to hit as all this was pulled away from them. So I think the NBA, and I really mean this, I'm not just, and I believe this, I'm not just saying it because I'm sticking up for small market Charlotte. The NBA has a responsibility to these other eight teams to give them the resources to continue developing and practicing and getting better as not only teams but franchises. They can't just let them sit on the shelf for X amount of months until December. If the NBA doesn't do anything for these other eight teams, I think that's, to me, that's not going to be forgotten. And that's going to be a black eye on the league. And so there's a political part of this. Of course, JB and the players are pissed off. But, like, this is where Michael Jordan and these other owners of these eight teams have got to flex back. And they've got to demand resources between now and next December. Because if they don't, we're not that far away from another CBA. And a lot of, bargaining that's going to have to happen. And my fear, not all these eight teams are small markets, but some of them are. And some of the smallest markets in the league. And my fear with this is that it actually is going to have a lingering effect with some of these franchises. I know that seems maybe like I'm over exaggerating, but I think this is a danger zone for Charlotte. Like, these are young players, and they cannot go X amount of months without not only being on a court, picking up a basketball and sharing it together. They need to be around each other. Like, these are things that I hope these conversations are happening in the NBA, because I know they're scrambling to make this 22 team thing work. But you could look back and say, oh man, that was a mistake. Like, the hangover for these other eight franchises might be a little bit more noticeable next season than I think a lot of people are talking about.
Yeah. And one of the things that some of these other eight teams are proposing is that they'd be able to start training camp a week or a week and a half earlier than the other teams. I think that at the minimum, like, right, that's something that should absolutely lock into place. Like, that's like where you start from and you argue out. And it is important to remember too that, like, the Hornets were this rebuilding team in a small market that was checking a lot of boxes and doing things the right way and stuff too. But also in this other pool of eight teams, you know, you've got the Hawks who have a similar sort of, I mean, they're well ahead of the Hornets right now, but, like, they have a similar rebuild going on too. They also have one of the game's youngest, most marketable stars in Trae Young. And then one of these other eight teams is the Golden State bleeping Warriors too. Like, Steph Curry, Draymond Green, like, and, you know, their ownership group, Steve Kerr, like, the Bob Myers at the front office, like, there's a heavyweight in the corner of these eight teams over here too, which perhaps that helps. Not like, you know, Golden State is not a franchise that's like hurting for cash. Like, they're sitting on a gold mine and they're going to keep printing money for at least a few more years. But I think it probably helps the team, you know, helps these other eight teams that one of them is, has Steph Curry and is the Golden State Warriors. That probably doesn't hurt the case here either.
Because everybody kind of preaches the same thing in terms of team building and how you do it, certainly as a team in Charlotte's situation. And so I just don't, I'm just a little over the fact of hearing, like, you stink, go home, stay away. Because because they're actually doing what all you guys said they should have been doing all along, and now the tables have turned, and now it's like, yeah, but you're not good enough, go away. It's like, well, but hold on a second. Like, they're trying to build a team and they're developing young players, and now just because we have this situation, you want them to go away. Like, that's not you know. So Silver, I think, is smart enough to recognize this, and I hope that the majority of the owners, at some point, this will become a conversation where they say, okay, we got to take care of this group over here. They're still part of the league.
Yeah. Specific to Charlotte, there's been a fair amount of cognitive dissonance, I feel like, from national talking heads or NBA media types with the Hornets and, you know, how they parted ways with Kemba and what they are now. You know what I mean? And this is what one of the things I brought up when I was on FNZ this morning is, like, what the Hornets have now going forward, where you can see, Spencer, you mentioned they have all their assets. They have all their draft picks, and there's some good – they're going to have a chance to go grab some good players in the draft they have. I mean, we'll see where the cap settles, but they could be able to operate as a cap space team this summer and certainly in the following summer too. Again, we'll see how that shakes out. But it's like these are the benefits of not signing yourself up for 5 more years and $200 million of Kemba Walker, who we all love. Again, my favorite player in the NBA. But these are the benefits of that trade-off that you made to move on from Kemba a year ago. And I think it's the sign of what is now a healthy organization. I mean, could you imagine if Charlotte was heading into the same scenario now as one of the 8 teams on the outside looking in, but instead they've got Kemba Walker nursing a knee injury. Right. They traded away a first round pick at the deadline this year to try to make a playoff push. They didn't even get into the playoffs, and now they'd be out of pick. You know, I mean, 'cause like, these are some of the scenarios that could have easily happened. And I do think the way things fell out with Kemba, we've talked about this too much on this pod, but like, it was unfortunate, but since then, I think ownership, front office with the Hornets, they've done a lot of good in both the draft and in both asset management since then.
And I think the thing that it's disappointing or sucks about this situation is, like, you have these 8 teams that are not participating, so they're already at a disadvantage because they're not playing games together, but they're also, outside of maybe Golden State, they're also lacking talent. And then so it's like 2 things working against them. Yes. And so I do kind of want to talk about maybe having these 8 teams play against each other in some kind of televised event. I don't know how they would kind of draw up interest with this, because these teams are clearly not in the play-in or the playoffs or whatever you want to call this 22 teams that are being sent down to Orlando. But I do think it would be cool to actually play some kind of like meaningful tournament with these 8 teams. I just don't know how you would draw up the attention. It's funny. I saw a tweet the other day about, hey, what they should do is have these 8 teams play against each other, and the top team will get the top pick in the draft, and or maybe have the top odds at the draft. And I'm just like, right, I can't imagine, like,
yeah, oh, I mean, that would be awesome.
It'd be awesome, but can you imagine Monk going out there, or like PJ or Miles, and like, yeah, let's go compete for the number one pick so that maybe our job can be replaced. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I know. Yeah, it's like only in a vacuum does that make sense too. You know what I mean? Like let's incentivize them by giving them better odds at the number one pick. Doesn't everyone like that? Until you think of, well, yeah, but then they could turn around and draft someone, you know, they could draft someone to replace any of these guys in the starting lineup or on, you know, off the bench or whatever, to your point, Richie. That idea is cool, but really more so in theory than like practicality.
Yeah. Yeah. I really like the idea of having some kind of meaningful tournament between these 8 teams, where even if it's not like the winner, like Charlotte, I guess in that situation would be the one seed. Like, if they won the whole deal, it's like, we can't just like hand them the best odds now. I mean, imagine Phoenix and Washington then, when they were like, wait a minute, you made us come down here and play 10 meaningful games, but you didn't give us a chance to go play in the tank tournament. So it's just, there's no fair way to do it. But yeah, even if it's only a, you know, like, you do it regionally, like Charlotte gets up with
Atlanta,
and, you know, they can drive down the road and they have like a 2-week long training camp, and you play, you know, you play a 7-game series, and you're able to maybe potentially satisfy your local TV deals. Right. Yeah. Like, I don't know. There's got to be some ideas, some scenarios. I don't know what it would mean, these seven games. I don't think you can make it mean anything other than just keeping the fan bases engaged.
Right.
Allowing these teams to get together, get some competitive basketball going. I mean, but that's enough for me. But just give them something. Help them with something to keep the iron sharp. And, I think Charlotte should be kind of example 1A because they seem to be the team that – and I'm sure I'm overlooking something, of course, but they really did seem to be the team with like a young core who's hitting its stride, who is one of the hungrier of these eight, right? They want to get back out there and kind of prove that was real. And this was momentum they can pick back up and keep going. So even if it's something just a two team training camp between these eight, I think that would be enough.
Some of the proposals were a combination of voluntary mandatory workouts for 2 weeks in July, regional mini camps in August that include joint practices for a period of days and approximately three televised games. This is from Woj's report. That's significant, you know, if that came to fruition, because the Hornets are sitting at 67 completed games now. And I believe isn't 70 the magic number for them to hit as far as the local TV deal goes too. So that seems notable. But to your point about interest, like, I mean, outside of, you know, the three of us, whatever the closest facsimile of us there is to like an Atlanta Hawks podcast and like 12 of our closest friends, I don't think there's going to be a lot of interest in the I-85 rivalry. If that's happening in August, because like that's when the playoffs in this NBA format are set to start, I think August 16th or 17th or something like that now with the play-in game. Yeah. So you might be running into that unless you could squeeze it in ahead of time. And it does also sort of work against the NBA wanted to have one environment. You know what I mean? Like that was the idea of Orlando as opposed to having one thing in Orlando, one thing in Vegas. But you know, maybe they do need to throw these teams a bone with that. Also, other proposal, organized team activities, OTAs for mid-September. And like we mentioned earlier, teams could get an opportunity to start training camp like a week or week and a half earlier than those who were in the 22-team field in Orlando prior to the 2020-2021 season.
Real quick idea. I don't even know if this is possible, but if you could somehow group these, you know, these eight teams up into four different mini training camps, and you could get, you know, each of the two teams, if they share a division, like the one way you can make it matter is like, okay, Atlanta and Charlotte, you're going to play seven game series after these joint practices, and the winner of that series, you know, they get, so you guys will play each other four times next year. Well, the winner of that series gets an extra home game. So losers got to travel, you know, one more, you know, just something like that. That seems like it just to make it mean anything to get, you know, fans and local markets a little bit more interested.
Yeah. It's hard to think of these ideas with, you know, like that original idea that I proposed that I saw on a tweet. In theory, it works better than actually, you know, when you put it into practice. So I think one overlooked aspect of this, of Charlotte not playing, has to be the financial side. We were actually discussing this on our Slack channel, and listeners, if you want to get in on our Slack conversation, send us a review on Apple Podcasts and we'll send you guys an invite. But anyway, we were discussing how Charlotte, a small market team, is going to be missing out on this TV revenue. And very well, next season, the salary cap, I've heard projections might actually be the same, like 109, you know, 109 million, the same as this year as it is next year, giving the Hornets just $21 million in space. And I don't think they would have been active to begin with in terms of free agency. And Kupchak mentioned that today, you know, just because you have cap space doesn't mean you have to actually go out and fill it with signing of free agents. But still, Spencer, like, how does this affect an organization like a small market in Charlotte, knowing that next season, you know, the salary cap is probably not going to be getting up to that projected $115 million.
Yeah, it could go a lot of different directions, and this is this will come into play, you know, when the offseason does finally happen, and they're going to have to start having these conversations about where the cap's going to land for future seasons. You know, and you also can't forget, like, NBA games are still not being televised in China, and we don't know when that's going to happen. So that financial hit is going to carry over into next season. I think if you're the Hornets, you're kind of pulling for you're pulling for the salary hit, the salary cap hit to be steep like this next season. Like I would, if I were the Hornets, I'd rather lose a lot of space this coming year, because one of the things they'll probably talk about if it's just 109, or even if they keep it at 115 for this coming year and then smooth it down in years after, is it'll be like, it'll almost be a very similar effect to what 2016 was for Charlotte. It's like, they, you know, the cap spiked when they had all these contracts they had to sign, so they were inflated. Well, now, if they were to kind of smooth the decline in following years, now you're talking about it, you know, the kind of the stock line decreasing as Charlotte's cap space is going in the other direction. Mm-hmm. So that could really have a very adverse effect to their rebuilding plans. So I think that what we need to happen is, all right, let's just take the huge haircut this year on the cap. That means it lands, I'm just throwing out a number. That means it lands at 100. Okay. Yeah. So now Charlotte only has like whatever that is, like $12 million in space. Fine. There weren't going to be that many teams this summer that were going to be looking to dump salary anyways, because the free agency class sucks. Okay. Mm-hmm. And Charlotte has double the amount of space the following summer they have this summer. So that's when you really want the cap to be at least generally healthy. Or at least in recovery mode. So this is something that is really very, very telling for the rebuilding process and how quickly Charlotte can move. But, you know, the other side to that is that MJ is a small market owner, is losing tons of money. And so even if he has a lot of cap space, there's no guarantee he's going to even spend anywhere close to to those amount of dollars. So there's a lot of moving parts here, but I hope that made sense a little bit.
It would be pretty frustrating if after 4 years of being just like totally stuck in cap purgatory since 2016, that as the Hornets were getting ready to head into an off season where they would have buyer's power as one of the teams that has the most amount of cap space. So you could have tried to sign a player, Christian Wood, Joe Harris, whomever, and then you still could have had some room to try to get involved in some lopsided salary deals or whatever and try to scoop up assets. So it's frustrating if that all evaporated. But yeah, I mean, if the cap number settles in, if it sticks at 109, or if it settled in at 100 or whatever, like that's better than where it's like, dude, there were projections in May that had the cap set for like $95 million. For next season. And then there was one NBA owner that said that because with some of these projections, there were going to be 25 NBA teams paying the luxury tax, which is like an insane number. Like it's just not, it's a number that you can't have, but one NBA owner suggested lowering it, have the cap drop down to $95 million, but then have the luxury tax line stay where it is, which is just like an insane delta between the two. And so I'm hopeful that something like that doesn't come to pass. And perhaps depending on how things shake out, because the Hornets are set to be in the hole so much below the cap already and have more money coming off the books in 2021, with Cody Zeller, Batum, depending on whether they swing a trade with those guys or whatever. But it's like maybe they end up having a little bit more of an advantage as other teams are trying to move salary, or other franchises have less space than they were projected for, and they have smaller margin of error than perhaps the Hornets do, because they're already set to be so far below what the cap line was projected for.
I don't think that the cap will get that. I don't think it'll get anywhere close. Like, I mean, I know you were just like, it's just one, and you can read all kinds of stuff out there. And the only way that would happen is if they'd have to give teams an out, like they'd have to create it, reintroduce the amnesty clause or something. Yeah. Right. You know, they'd have to give an escape mode outside of dumping salary.
Yeah.
So I doubt it. But again, I think the worst case scenario for Charlotte is this. Okay, let's keep it generally around where it was going to be for 2021, and then we'll smooth it down in following years. That would be detrimental to Charlotte's rebuilding plans, at least if you think they're going to try to rebuild, at least in some way through free agency, which is a safe bet.
Yeah, yeah, and it should be. It should be. Like, I think the draft is a priority, but free agency is vitally important to anything and everything Charlotte's trying to do in the next handful of years here.
Yeah, eventually you have to get there. You have to be players in the free agent market. I mean, obviously Charlotte's not a big-time destination, but they eventually got to get there because you can't win just with rookies and young players. But I do want to share our thoughts on this season as it seems like the Hornets' actual season is over with. I remember talking about this on a preseason pod where we gave our projection totals for the win totals. That's kind of out the window now as they did not play a full 82-game season. But the projection, guys, if you remember from the beginning of the year in Vegas, was 23.5, which was like the lowest in the league or maybe tied for the lowest with Cleveland. But the Hornets did finish with 23 wins, and that was on a shortened season. So I think we can all agree that it was a success, or maybe just a lot of good came out of this season. We saw a lot of positive things with this team in terms of the emergence of Devontae Graham. PJ Washington, for the most part, played very, very solid for a majority of the season. As always, you know, the rookies always hit that rookie wall, and he will be on an NBA all-rookie team. Whether or not he'll be the first or second is still up for debate. I actually think the most pleasant surprise in my eyes, maybe it's just because of my expectations, I think Rozier actually surprised me in terms of the impact that he had off ball. And it was mentioned today in the press conference with Borrego, but just like the clutch offense stats, like we've known the Hornets for the past couple of years to just be kind of in the lower tier when it comes to that. Hornets were first in effective field goal percentage and first in three-point percentage, as well as seventh in net rating when it comes to clutch offense. And I asked JB this question about maybe Kemba being off the team, does that give you more flexibility and more creativity to be a little bit better in those types of situations?
Yeah, good question. I mean, I've studied this. You know, why were we so effective in those moments? Most teams in this league, it's the most talented, experienced player that you want these end of games, the ball in their hands. And you know, as I study it, we made shots down the stretch, like in these tight situations. Maybe that was a product of just being young and naive, and we're just going to go out and let it fly and not be worried about the moment. That's one factor, but maybe our guys were just ready to step up and they weren't waiting for someone else to do it. They went and did it. And the one thing we did a lot this year is we worked on end of game more than ever. That's one area that we put an emphasis on is our execution in the game. We put an emphasis there every practice, every drill, opportunity, every film session. What do we want to look like in the game in those situations? And our guys were sponges. They ate it up. They got better in those situations. But we shot the ball extremely well. You got to give PJ credit, Terry credit, Devontae credit. Miles hit some big shots in the game for us. To be, you know, first in the league in three-point percentage in those clutch games, I think just speaks to, number one, their ability to shoot the ball, the poise that they played with, and trusting each other. I think that's part of it, is back to your original question. I think this group was trusting each other. It may not be my shot. If somebody else has the open look, we're going to trust them. I'm not going to get it done by myself every single game. I'm going to trust that we find the right shot. And I think that's the thing, that we found the right shots in the game more than maybe we had done the year before. And so, yeah, I'm really proud of the group, how they stepped up in the game, especially on the offensive end. Overall net rating, I think you said, was seventh. So we execute extremely well in the game situation.
That brings me to Borrego. I think fans should be optimistic about him after these two seasons. He's not afraid to try new lineups. He's not afraid to play the hot hand. And he just, it seems like he has a way with these young players and guiding them as they kind of play through their mistakes. So going into this season, I wasn't very high on this team. I don't know if I went over or under on the 23.5, but if it wasn't over, it probably wasn't much more. So general thoughts for me, I think they overachieved, they played well, and I myself am very happy with the hire with James Borrego.
Yeah, I think Borrego, we've talked about him before. I can't remember if this was, maybe we did a mid-season report card thing, or if this was at another time earlier in the pandemic, but just like, he checks every box, dude. Like he plays he wants to play basketball in a very modern style, in the culture that he's instilled as a leader of men, and with a focus on player development. And he's so damn creative and willing to try anything. Perhaps he even tinkers a little bit too much for some people's liking, but, yeah, no, like he is a great young coach. I think he brings everything you could possibly want. I hope Charlotte's able to build a playoff team eventually with him as the leader, because I'd love to see this guy who maybe has some Nick Nurse-like tendencies of just willing to try any bleeping thing to pull out a win in a playoff game. So I'd be curious to see what that looks like. So yeah, I don't think, you know, JB is, you know, Popovich part two, but I think he is a really rock solid young coach and did a nice job leading this team to totally overachieve this season, outperform their win percentage. And I think a big deal part of that obviously too was just Devontae, his threat as a pick and roll scorer and what he did in the clutch this season was tremendous.
Yeah, I agree with what you guys have said. I mean, I think one of the cool things about this season, it really started to show maybe James Borrego's, I think his basketball philosophy really started to show through a little bit. You know, he likes versatile players. So, Jalen McDaniels and how he used PJ Washington, Miles was able to be a little bit more positionally versatile this year. Look, I think that the Hornets are in great shape with him. And, you know, Brian, you brought this up on WFNZ this morning, but he's also a great leader. You know, I think he's the perfect kind of coach for these young players to be learning from. I can't imagine they don't look up to him. He's just a first-class kind of guy. But, yeah, I mean, Devontae, Rozier was great this year. Richie, you know, you brought up the clutch thing. I think there is something to, you know, the Kemba Walker or – for any team, you know, Brad Beal in Washington, like there's one guy, you know, who it's going through. Right. It's the only place they can go, you know, in this situation, just that simple little Devontae with the ball, Terry sprints to him and slips the screen to the opposite wing. I mean, just teams could deal with that play, you know, and it's so simple. Yeah. And so, yeah, you got to feel good about where the Hornets are. They got a long way to go, and this thing could break a lot of different directions, but they do have assets. They got a lot of young, cheap players. You know, at least five of them that you think, okay, two of these guys are going to break in the right direction and be NBA starters, and that means that Charlotte is headed in the right direction to be sure.
It is. I know we're wrapping up here, but man, the clutch shooting numbers are crazy. Devontae, 41% shooting on threes in clutch. Terry Rozier in the clutch this season, 55% shooting, 46 on threes, 81% from the line. Devontae, 89% from the line. PJ Washington,
I feel like is good.
61% from the field in clutch minutes this season, including 80% at the line, which is nuts because he was not a very good free throw shooter in general. I mean, it's a sample of just 12 free throws, but also 3 of 6 shooting on threes. Marvin Williams was great in clutch minutes before he left the team this season too. So yeah, I guess they ran plenty of pick and roll, but it was a little different than, you know, pick and roll with number 15 and just letting the opponents just basically maul him and trap him into oblivion. A little bit more variety this season.
Well, it does suck that the Hornets aren't playing any kind of meaningful games. Maybe they'll get some kind of tournament or, you know, at least them with the Hawks playing some games together. But the Hornets season is basically over. Thanks again, guys, for tuning into another Buzz Beat. I know Spencer teased this on the last episode, but I think we may have to postpone our big board episodes, maybe, Spencer, just as the draft has been pushed back to October. I mean, what do you think about that?
Yeah. I think we've got enough time. We can plug that in.
Yeah. It's, what we're going to have to start doing before the draft even happens, we're going to have to kick out our 2021 big boards too. Yeah. I feel like at this point, it's going to be nuts that go, 16 months in between drafts. And then we're going to have 8 months in between drafts on the backside, which is it's crazy. There's going to be a lot of moving parts going forward here.
Yep.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.